From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Democrats want to get rid of their favorite rule. Arkansas moves to protect women's sports, and the Biden administration seeks to diminish unalienable rights and religious freedom. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Reagan Republican, and Christ follower. With a Senate that is evenly split, Democrats are seeking to get rid of the filibuster rule in order to move forward their legislation. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins on Wednesday to talk about it was Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma.
Senator, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, let me start with the filibuster issue. Then I'm going to get your take on what is happening at the border. Is this an apt description that the Democrats are holding this over the head of Republicans, saying if you don't come along with our agenda, we're going to have to blow up the legislative filibuster and drive everything through?
That is exactly what's happening. Literally, the Democrats have created a crisis and then saying to solve the crisis, they need to be able to blow everything up and do it their way. They did more filibusters for President Trump in that time period than any other time in American history. And then now that Biden has taken office, President Biden steps up and says the filibuster is being overused. They need to just get rid of it. That is absolutely absurd. We need to be able to protect the rights of the minority. That's what the filibuster is really all about. And so for Democrats to be able to step up and say, we don't believe in minority rights anymore, is a very bizarre place for them to be able to try to stand and to say the American people should not be heard.
Well, it's beyond just the minority rights. Now, a few years ago, there was a big push by conservatives to eliminate the filibuster right after Trump's election, which I was opposed to because I feel like it serves a vital purpose. In fact, Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, made this statement maybe last week on the Senate floor, is that, you know, if you run the Senate just like you do the House, every time there's a change of power, you could get a radical push of legislation one way or the other, which not only creates instability domestically, but internationally, it creates instability and makes America undependable by our allies.
That's correct. 33 Democrats in 2017 wrote a letter to Chuck Schumer and to Mitch McConnell at that time, 33 senators from the Senate, and said there should not be any changes to the filibuster. We need to protect the rights of the minority voice always, and this should be a long-term tradition. Now all but two of those Democrat senators have all said, no, we just need to punt it. And when asked, they would say the only difference is the change in president. So this is absurd to try to just change the rules in the middle. The uniqueness about the filibuster is this forces the one place in government where all sides have to be heard.
Yeah.
That is a benefit to us, not a detriment to us. It doesn't happen in the Supreme Court or in the White House or in the House of Representatives. It only happens in the Senate, where we make sure that every single bill, every single issue, all voices are heard, the debate is finished, and then you move forward to what's the common ground. We've got a lot of common ground as Americans, but if you get a situation where it's a simple, straight majority on everything, then that will rapidly push through things and we'll have rapid transitions in our nation where we're used to having the stability of our nation.
Right. Absolutely. It is the one point where you can move toward consensus, which creates the balance that we need in our society and in our government. So I'm concerned by what I'm hearing, the saber rattling of the Democrats, and I feel that they're just waiting for a couple of measures they push through, that they don't get the votes from Republicans because the stuff is so far-reaching that they'll then blow up the filibuster. But this could have quite significant ramifications. And, of course, we should remind people that it's 50-50 Senate.
Right.
We're one heartbeat away from the majority shifting to the other side.
That's correct. And the odd thing is that now, after the Democrats have used the filibuster so many times in the last 4 years, now the line they continue to say is, if you agree with the filibuster, you agree with the Jim Crow era, and you're a racist if you support the filibuster. It was absolutely absurd when they used it hundreds of times in the last 4 years. It's absolutely absurd now. This is not a relic of racism. This is a stabilizing part of our government where we have dialogue, force the majority to listen to the minority, no matter who's in majority or minority, and then to be able to walk through for common ground. So that this is a good thing, not a racist evil thing.
And I know that this probably gets overstated, but I do think this is instructive when you look at the blatant hypocrisy where, you know, as you said, 33 Democrats signed a letter saying we need to keep the filibuster in place. That was during the Trump administration. Now they're saying, oh, no, we don't want it. We don't need it. It's racist. It goes back to the Jim Crow era. We got to get rid of it. So you cannot trust. I think this what this shows. You cannot trust a single word they say.
Right. And I would tell you, I strongly support the statements of Senator Joe Biden, because when he was in the Senate, he was an outspoken advocate for the filibuster to be able to protect that. And so if we're going to talk about do I support Senator Biden or President Biden, if that seems to be two different people, because now President Biden wants to get rid of what he was protecting when he was in the Senate.
Yeah, true. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Let's talk now about the border. You were down at the border last week. What did you see?
I saw children packed very tightly in the places, and I understand completely why Joe Biden is trying to keep the cameras out of that area. There were two shocking aspects that really caught my attention. Overnight on Thursday night, we went to an area where the Border Patrol is literally checking in people and releasing them into the country as if it is a hotel reception area, where if you come across the border and you have a family unit with a child that's less than six in your family, then you are processed and released into the country within 2 hours. When you come in the country, there is no other background checks or any tracking. There's no COVID testing. There's no anything. They come straight in the country. They're released to be able to go anywhere they want in the country. It's completely open for them. But the unaccompanied minors that are coming across, the 17 years old and younger, they're being sent to the Donna, Texas facility. In one of the pods I was in, that pod is designed to hold 80 people. When I was there, there were 709, all packed in shoulder to shoulder in that area, and many of them had been there 10 days in that kind of conditions. It is absolutely horrible what's occurring to those kids that are there, and it is a problem of President Biden's own making. With the change in policy that he had, getting rid of the way that President Trump had handled things, the border was stable at that point, and there was a lot of construction that's happening on the border fencing. Those policies were all taken away, and very predictably, now we have a rush at the border again.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I was there a year ago at the border, and it was like a ghost town. In fact, I took two trips last year, one down in California, other in Texas, and the last one almost exactly a year ago in California. And there was very, very few people coming through because the process had been set up where they would stay in Mexico, and when their number was called, they would be processed. This is a crisis, as you said, of Joe Biden's own making. But let me ask you this. How are they going to resolve this crisis?
Currently, President Biden has only said, don't come. That's all he's done to this point. But he's sent a signal with his actions very different than with his words. With his actions, they're allowing every family that has a six-year-old or younger in the family to be able to come on into the country, basically with a two-hour delay at the border, and then they're into the country where they want to go. Unaccompanied minors are sent anywhere in the country that they choose to be able to go, but it's taking so many people to be able to process all those folks. The Border Patrol was telling me they have hundreds of people that are single adults that are crossing the border in other border areas that they can't cover because all the border personnel are actually being used to be able to check in these other folks. So in reality, we're open. And until President Biden changes the policies, actually secures the border again, as it was before, this is going to continue to be an issue.
It's not only a humanitarian crisis. This is a security crisis for the nation.
It is. And just that area in the Rio Grande Valley where I was, just this year alone, Border Patrol told me they have apprehended people from 56 different countries. 56 different countries. This is just not all people from Central America. They're from all over the world, and they're coming through.
Wow. Another example of the consequences of elections. Senator James Lankford, thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Glad to be able to join you. Thanks, Tony.
You can find out more about Senator Lankford when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, Arkansas State Senator Missy Thomas Ervin.
Stay up to date on what's happening at Family Research Council by downloading our Stand Firm app. We share all of our latest content there, so it's easy for you to have all you need in one place. See the latest tweets, articles, videos, radio programs, and blog posts all in one spot. Visit the App Store on your phone and search for FRC's Stand Firm app to get a conservative, biblically informed source for what is happening in our nation's capital. Download the Stand Firm app today.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Last week, we talked about legislation in Arkansas that would prevent doctors from administering gender hormone treatment to minors. Well, they upped their game this week when the state passed a bill designed to maintain fair competition in women's sports. Joining Tony to talk about the bill is Arkansas State Senator Missy Thomas Irvin.
Senator, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure and an honor.
Well, thank you. You joined a host of other Republicans. About Republicans in, I think, at least 20 state legislatures have been working on similar legislation this year. What was the driving force for you? Why did you see this as so important?
You know, I come from a very small town in Arkansas, and my little girls, and they wanted to play soccer so badly. And so I fought really, really hard, as well as a whole group of young ladies. They wanted to play soccer for their school, and they didn't have the ability to do that. And so I raised money. I volunteered to be a high school girl soccer coach, and I coached those young ladies and went before the school board, went before the school administration, and fought hard just so that they would have the opportunity to play the sport that they grew up playing and that they loved for their high school. So I know firsthand how hard it is, even today, 50 years after Title IX has passed, for young ladies to have that equal athletic opportunity and equal athletic competition ability, and then also to work to fulfill their goals and their dreams and to earn scholarships at the next level. And so I witnessed it, you know, and felt it firsthand because they had to fight hard just to get that equal access to the playing field. And right. So when I saw what had happened in Connecticut to those two young girls that were the track athletes who had worked their entire lives, and I have daughters that ran track and competed in pole vaulting and different track events as well as soccer and golf. You know, it really bothered me so much that men were really trying to work to dismantle girls' sports and were seeking the ability to have an unfair advantage and win those titles and those spots on the podium, and that's not right.
I know, based on polling, that the majority of Americans agree with you on that. The governor of South Dakota, as we just talked about, there was a similar bill there. She essentially let it die today. And one of the concerns that she expressed was that it would open the state up to immediate litigation that they were most certain to lose. Is that a concern that you have in Arkansas?
No, I think you saw strongly that the majority of our Arkansas legislature in the House and in the Senate, and then that, of course, was backed up by the governor who signed our bill, there was huge broad support for this legislation. And the people of the state of Arkansas have to have a voice. And like you said, the majority of Arkansans supported this policy and this legislation. And they are willing to go to battle for what their voice is and for what they stand for. Mm-hmm. And that's what we should be doing in America. We cannot roll over and just let people threaten us to be silent, threaten us to not stand up for what we believe in, threaten us to not take a stand for something that we all know is the right common sense policy in order to protect girls' opportunities when it comes to athletic events. And so, you know, I it's unfortunate. I think that was a bad decision, unfortunately, for the governor of South Dakota not to work with her legislature and support those efforts by those lawmakers, because clearly these young girls should have the ability to bring about a defense for a wrong which has occurred to them.
Yeah. Well, Missy, I can just say this. I'm glad you have a seat there in the Arkansas State Senate, because clearly you're not going to be silent on these issues that are, as you said, common sense issues. One final question for you. The NCAA leaning heavily on the South Dakota governor, you know, encouraging her to move away from this bill. Has there been any threats from the NCAA of boycotting Arkansas?
Not to me. not to me, and not that I'm aware of. And I honestly, you know, I'm not sure if they've seen, I have not personally seen anything publicly that they have stated or put forward. Yeah. And so I will say that the state of Mississippi is strong in the SEC, as is the state of Arkansas. But, you know, we are a strong SEC, NCAA state, as is the state of Mississippi, when you have Ole Miss and Mississippi State and many other colleges there that compete at high levels in the SEC. So that's a little remarkable to me, actually. And I actually haven't seen anything from the NCAA. And in fact, our Arkansas Activities Association, which is our state organization, they thanked us for the bill. They supported my bill.
Well, I don't really think you're going to hear much from them, because here's what happens when you stand up resolute and you don't cave, they usually go away. I mean, you don't negotiate with terrorists, and these are cultural terrorists, and you just you don't negotiate with them.
Exactly.
Find ways that you can positively impact the political process and the world around you when you visit TonyPerkins.com, and be sure to follow us on your favorite social media platform, including Gab. We'll be back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Would you like to spend more time in God's Word? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. The Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan takes you through the Scripture every day in an engaging manner. Start reading with FRC today. When you sign up, we text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. The State Department is making a lot of changes in the Biden administration, including some that will make the world more dangerous to many. Here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins as he introduces our next segment.
All right, the U.S. State Department released its latest human rights report yesterday and made clear that the previous administration's priorities will not be the priorities of this administration. In particular, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken hailed sexual and reproductive rights as human rights.
It's one of many steps, along with revoking the Mexico City policy, withdrawing from the Geneva Consensus Declaration, resuming support for the United Nations Population Fund, that we're taking to promote women's health and equity at home and abroad. Because women's rights, including sexual and reproductive rights, are human rights.
Well, how many times I need to tell you, elections have consequences really, internationally, there's whiplash with what is happening. But Secretary Blinken didn't stop there. He also slammed the recently disbanded Commission on Unalienable Rights that was created under the State Department during the Trump administration by Secretary Pompeo, calling its view on human rights, quote unquote, unbalanced.
There is no hierarchy that makes some rights more important than others. Past unbalanced statements that suggest such a hierarchy, including those offered by a recently disbanded State Department Advisory Committee, do not represent a guiding document for this administration. At my confirmation hearing, I promised that the Biden-Harris administration would repudiate those unbalanced views. We do so decisively today.
With me now to talk about this and more is the former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you, Tony. Thank you for having me on today, especially here during Holy Week.
Absolutely. And actually, that's probably a good place to start. I'm going to take his last statement, dismissing the work that the Commission on Unalienable Rights did. That basically, he's saying that there is no hierarchy. All rights are equal. All rights are human rights.
But there has to be a foundation. And that is why your administration, the Trump administration and the department under your leadership, put a heavier emphasis on religious freedom.
You know, Tony, it was sad to hear yesterday that the work of the commission that I had put together, but this was people, you know many of them, Tony, people from every major religion, people from across the political spectrum. There were Democrats and Republicans. We put together a commission that was chaired by Professor Marianne Glendon, and it was singularly focused on understanding human rights. We are each made in the image of God, and there are a certain set of rights that come with that. And in the American tradition, our founders talked about that and thought an awful lot about that. So we worked really hard, and the commission developed a 60-page document. I hope people will go read it. You can't hardly find it on the State Department website anymore. They have buried it because the progressive left has demanded that they do so. But it's out there. You can find the PDF. It takes just a bit to read. But it comes back to these fundamental rights that we each have because, in fact, we are endowed by our Creator with them and not from some government. And to now watch this administration declare that the government can, in fact, create rights or destroy rights, and that these are political creations, not things that are inherent in the traditions of our country and in the nature of humanity, is something that, you know, I suspect that they probably would consider. But when it's really sad when you see what happens. I've watched people all around the world read the report that Professor Glendon and the commission put together. The world's largest Muslim organization, the Nahdlatul Ulama in Indonesia and Jakarta, had taken this on board. They too were coming to understand human rights in their tradition. And this is something that I think America will regret, but your point about elections having consequences is real. And it's something that I'm committed to continuing to build upon in spite of what the State Department decision was yesterday.
Well, Mr. Former Secretary, just to dwell on this for a moment, because I know we've talked about this, but I think a refresher is good for our listeners. And while this administration has been dismissive, I still think this is a very valuable contribution to our understanding going forward of rights. I mean, what the commission did is they took and looked at the connection between America's constitutional principles, the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and our U.S. foreign policy. And as you alluded to, that if we approach, as this administration is, that these rights are created, positive rights, is created by the government can take them away. What you were doing and what this commission was doing was going down to the bedrock of what is the foundation of human rights. What are those universal human rights that are given to us by God, not by man? Therefore, they can't be taken away by government. They have to be respected and protected.
Yes, Tony, look, as we talk about this, I'm reminded that the State Department didn't take away any of our rights yesterday. they simply repudiated the central understanding of the American tradition of human rights, the fact that, in fact, that we are deeply endowed with this by God, and that no government can take them away from us. That is a dangerous proposition to suggest somehow that government can grant a set of rights for all of humanity, because we know different nations will come to different conclusions. We know that they will, inside of the United States, different places will come to different conclusions, and these rights are inalienable. This is what our founders spoke of. Government can't take them away. And it is it's encouraging that I got notes from people all across the United States yesterday when they saw this, regretting what the Biden State Department did yesterday.
Along those lines, let me ask you this question for our listeners all across this country and around the world who are very discouraged. And this latest action by the State Department adds to that discouragement and concern. What is your message to believers, not only here in the United States, but around the world, that was following America's lead and was encouraged by what happened in the last 4 years, but now it's like they're deflated?
Yeah. My message is be not discouraged. The United States, I think Churchill had it right. We, in the end, when we've exhausted all the other possibilities, we get it right. And I am confident that faithful leaders across the world, faithful leaders all across America, will return our nation to the fundamental understandings that our founders had, and these ideas of protection of the unborn, these ideas about religious freedom, this central understanding of human beings being created in the image of God and therefore having these inherent rights as central to the way we think about our country, we will prevail. We will be successful, and the United States will continue to be the most exceptional nation in the history of civilization.
We just have to do our part, and that is not shrink back in silence or allow the left with their megaphone of the media to drown out that hope that we find. I want one final question for you. And this pertains to one of the countries that you focused on intently. You mentioned just a moment ago the issue of China. We just got a couple of minutes left. But your concern about what we see happening with China?
Well, in a couple of minutes, it's difficult to summarize. But it is the case, Tony, and you have now suffered from this. This is the most repressive regime that has led in China, the Chinese Communist Party under Xi Jinping. It is the greatest, most existential threat to the United States. Those of us who push back against it, they are fearful of. They've sanctioned you now, or threatened to. They have sanctioned me and my family. It's because they know that their foothold is tenuous. And this actually, I'll close here, this actually goes back to what we were just talking about. This is a nation that denies and represses any exercise of religion outside of the state. We know that's not sustainable. We know that model will not work. And we know that the people of China who want to practice their faith, whatever faith that may be, will one day have that opportunity. The Lord will watch over them, and I am confident they will be in a better place 5 or 10 years from now.
And while we have that freedom here, we need to use that freedom to speak on behalf of those that are being persecuted and repressed by their governments, those in China, Iran, and elsewhere. Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. Bless you. Have a happy Easter.
You do the same.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, encouraging you to pray for our nation. I want to thank you for being with us, and I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.